Exodus 34, verse 11. Verse 10, I'm sorry. And he said, Behold, I make a covenant before all thy peoples, before all thy people I will do marvels, such as not been seen, or have not been done in all the earth, nor in any nation. And all the people among which thou art shall see the work of the Lord, for it is a terrible thing that I will do with thee. That's sort of the introduction to high places, groves, and pillars.
Introduction to Christianity.
It's a terrible thing that I will do with thee. Observe thou that which I command thee this day. Behold, I drive out before thee the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Take heed to thyself, lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land whither thou goest, lest it be for a snare in the midst of thee. But you shall destroy their altars, break their images, cut down their groves, for thou shalt worship no other god. For the Lord, whose name is Jealous, is a jealous God. Lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they go a-whoring after their gods, and do sacrifice unto their gods, and one call thee, and thou eat of his sacrifice. And thou take of their daughters unto thy sons, and their daughters go a-whoring after their gods, and make thy sons go a-whoring after their gods. Thou shalt make thee no molten gods. Now, that precept is repeated hundreds and hundreds of times in the scriptures. As we saw Tuesday night, this word here where it says the images and the groves, the images are the pillars, the groves are the Asherah, or the female deity. On the pillar is that which is connected with being reasonable. You worship it because it's been successful both in the society that you grew up in and it's been successful in your life. But in an interesting way, the groves are only worshipped because they're successful also. But they are successful in the way you as a unique organism define success. For some of you, your identity is so structured and so ingrained with pain, with suffering, with feeling badly, that your definition of success is to cut yourself, to feel badly, to be a failure. For others, the definition of success is different. But whatever it is, the definition of success ultimately has as its final point your perverted idea of life. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. You have to seek after life. What you as a unique, and life cannot be defined. Life can never be defined on a objective basis, except you know, your heart stops or some medical evidence. But every person that has ever lived defines life differently. And that's why Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Your definition of life is a product of the stimuli that have confronted you since your moment of birth, and the stimuli that have confronted you since before your birth, because there's genetic influence. And you define life in such a way that it, in truth, you know, the simplistic statement is that it's the opposite of separation. It's the opposite of the fear of death. But can you see how perverted that becomes? I I mean, I'm serious. There's some of you in the secret places of your mind or in the secret places of the high place that you cannot define life. Your secret definition of life is to be punished. There's some of you whose secret definition of life is to feel guilty. There's some of you whose secret definition of life is to inflict pain on someone else.
When you say secret, you mean secret from ourselves?
Yes.
It's not secret to others.
Well, it's secret.
Specifically.
It's only secret in terms of if there's no discernment, it's secret.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the thing that makes you, you. And because of that, you do so many things to cause, if your definition of success is in that arena, then by our life is in that arena, then you are programmed to fail by the world standards. But your failure is your definition of life. You are programmed to fail in every arena of your being, financially, sexually, emotionally, because your definition of failure is that failure is your definition of life. It's that which gives you identity. Now, the problem with this arena and this whole structural process of definition of life versus death and the fear of death, it's in the emotional realm of your being. The pillars are always in the reasonable or intellectual realm. Therefore, the pillar is always the male deity. The emotional arena is always the female deity or the Asherah or the grove. You understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Now it's time to be free from that, so you have no other definition of life other than Jesus Christ and Him alone.
Amen.
Now, any other definition of life, anything else that gives you life, either your definitions of success and reasonableness vis-a-vis the pillars, or your emotional subconscious responses to stimuli that give you a false definition of life, the scriptures call idolatry.
I have a response to what you're saying.
Well,
go ahead. You
wanna? I want us to dig deeper than you've ever believed possible. Because this is the only arena of freedom. Now, do you see how most or many of you throughout your life, stop a minute and be honest, maybe in this arena for the first time. Do you understand that you have failed in what you have tried to do because the failure in it brought you security or life? You didn't have to compete.
Yeah.
You didn't have to put yourself at risk. The reason you don't, there's a thousand reasons after the flesh, but the singular reason that you refuse to be put at risk is because the Antichrist refuses to live by faith. And faith, by definition, is total risk. So even we pollute the scriptures. It says in Corinthians, it says, look out among ye brethren, how not many wise men, not many noble, etc., etc., are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. And so you use that, and the religion has used that as a rationalization for their quote-unquote failure, and they've gloried in their failures. So do you. Every one of you in a certain arena have gloried in your failure. You've stood at that position. That became from God's standpoint, when God looks at you, he sees you standing on top of that idol, worshiping it, being intimate with it, eating the table of that idol, eating the food off the table of that idol, tithing to that idol, praying to that idol. God doesn't give one holy flip what your words are. For some of you, that's the emotional response. The intellectual response is you're standing over there worshiping on the idol of those pillars. You've got 100 definitions of ways of doing things and definitions of how to have interpersonal relationships. And the sickness is half of you have written the doctrine on that pillar. And so you take the majesty of the doctrine that we've been delivered into, and you take little pieces out of it, and you write it, and you just make that pillar more and more crowded with false idolatry. All of it is ministering to self. All of it is causing self to be realized in your perverted definition of self-realization. Now, it's time to cut this bullshit out. It's time to stop gaining your identity from a piece of the doctrine, or stop gaining your identity from someone's response to you or lack of response. I hope all of you, if you haven't, I beg of you, if you didn't listen to Tuesday night's tape, listen to it. Don't accept anyone's definition of what they think they heard. Now tonight we're going to talk about the groves. Maybe deeper than you've ever dreamed possible. Okay, now you're not going to hear everything I say tonight. You're not going to go out and be able to understand half of it. But you'll hear what you hear, and that'll be the point. That's the filter mechanism that God has placed. So, I mean, do you realize if you understood all this stuff, you'd explode? I mean, if you saw the totality of your false identity and the bullshit that you do that makes up everything that you are, you would explode.
I have a little problem with some of the stuff you're saying, because you preface a lot of the things with, there are some of you that are, get their identity, and there are others of you that, you know, I think you have this insight about A, B, and C are doing it this way, you know, these three are doing it that way, and I keep wondering which one am I. Is that the one I'm supposed to be thinking about?
You're trying to be.
Yeah. A positive. B negative.
No. You're supposed to have that response. You're supposed to have trouble with what I say. Woe be to you who don't have trouble with what I say. I have trouble with what I say.
Who's that backbiter? Who's that gossip?
Now, we've done this before, but we're going to do it again for the sake of
list.
Yeah, but this time I want your list to be much more inclusive of pillars, and that's why I want you to listen to last night's tape if you didn't hear it. But I mean, the Grove stuff also, but you know, this isn't a time to go, you know, it's not a time, this isn't a, let's repeat past Groves. Yeah, this isn't what this is about.
Remedial Groves.
Somebody go to Hebrews 2. Not everybody, just go, Harry, go read Hebrews 2 verses 8 through 14. And I'm gonna let you read them without comment.
Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet. For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. Right. And now we see not yet all things put under him, but we see Jesus,
who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, should taste death for every man. For it became him, for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons unto glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. For he that sanctifieth and they who are sanctified are all of one, for which cause he is not ashamed to call them brethren, saying, I will declare thy name unto my brethren in the midst of the church, will I sing praise unto thee. And again, I will put my trust in him, and again, behold, I and the children which God hath given me. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is, the devil.
Okay. No, read 15.
And deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage.
Okay, now that's that. There's a thousand scriptures that we're going to look at over time, but the one that you have to understand here is that Christ, in the process that was described in those scriptures, has delivered, made you free, saved you from the fear of death, from the bondage of being in the fear of death. Now, as we've said before, you don't know that you're walking, that you're a walking fear of death machine. That's all you are. You're nothing else. That's all Adam can be. That's all this sensory flesh can do, is be afraid of death. You can't do anything else. But the fear of death is not final shooting, or it's the fear of separation. And so you spend, because your hunk of protoplasm sees separation as death. Much more when you were the small child. So you've developed mechanisms to protect you from separation. Many of those mechanisms causes the separation, so you won't perceive that you've been separated. You initiate the action. And it gives you the illusion that you're not separate because you've done it. Do you understand?
I mean, like taking care of your own needs.
No, you separate yourself before someone else can, and therefore you won't perceive that as death.
Before they can reject
you, you separate from them. I mean, it's like you beat them to the punch. It's because you're responding to fear. You understand? You're being motivated, therefore you're being, and you do it all the time. Now, it's important to understand that it's not just in all these little things about environment. It's genetic, it's all of your background, it's the parents' background, it's all of these things that have brought you to the peak of the pyramid. And there's an eye on the peak of the pyramid. And that eye is the eye that sees God. Everything that was necessary to get to that point is okay, it's fine now. I mean, it served its purpose. It's done. You don't have to do it anymore. The chief cornerstone has been put on. Now the eye sees. Now, this example, a thing I just found out, I didn't remember until when I was home this time. My mother, my grandmother, and my dad's family was a matriarch after my father, my grandfather died. We got the family, the home there. My grandmother, my mother told me I spent half, all the time on my grandmother's knees. She taught me Norwegian and, all kinds of stuff. But the thing that she repeated over and over and over and over was a stupid thing. Now, to think about it, but it was, never forget you're an Anthony. That sounds really dumb. But who the hell cares? But at that time, that became, and probably still is, a subconscious motivation. But it's that which I responded to, and it was from my grandmother, which is from the whole history of the family. I mean, and from one standpoint, it was a positive thing because it caused, But from another, it was a totally, but it was a false identity. Now, all of the, we've talked about these last year, but I want to go over them again and have you remember. The other part of this is that all of these things that you fear death in, you have to do something to overcome death. The only thing you can overcome death with is your perception of what life is. And you perceive, or the human being, or this blob of stuff perceives life as sexuality from the earliest years. And so much of these things that they're revealed in your own unique sexuality. And that's the arena that we don't want to make this. That's where I've told you 100 times that your spiritual condition is revealed in your dealing with money and sex. Most of us are in bad shape. But the only, I don't know how else to do this, you know, except sort of what we did last year, that we said that these are the childish things. You know, when I was a child, I spake as a child, I thought as a child, I acted as a child, etc. When I became a man, I put away the childish things. Well, all of this stuff, whether it's pillars, whether it's groves, or whether it's weird identities, and all the idols and idolatries and belief systems, from the spiritual standpoint, every one of those is a childish thing. Because, and it's manifested in you now, especially in the grows, because you still respond to stimuli as you did when that happened. Whatever that trauma was as a child, you respond to it as an adult in the same way. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's just another emphasis, that it's a childish thing. Now, what are these childish things that totally wipe you out? You know, that cause you to respond emotionally without reason, without. See, it's the great. What was the word I want to say? It's the great caricature of abandonment. The compulsions are the caricature of abandonment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amen.
You know, I say, take no thought for yourself. Abandon yourself. Pick up your cross. Take no thought for your life. Take no thought for tomorrow. Okay, so you don't, but then you respond like an emotional idiot.
You abandon
yourself.
Because you abandon, not to the Father, you abandon yourself to your compulsions. So as I said before, if you know, wait on the Lord and you shall renew your strength, but if you're waiting with the mind of the Gentile, you'll die. Understand?
After fashion.
Okay, well, I'm going to review some of the things that cause these compulsions. I want to ask you something first. How many can remember one or more instances in their life when they were 1 year old or less?
I can't remember how old I was in water.
How many can remember when they were 3 years old or less?
I think I've got a 3-year old thing.
How many? 6. Is there anybody that can't remember? Is there anybody that can't remember below 6?
I can't remember below 40.
Gary can't remember yesterday, so leave him out of it.
Well, again, it's just an indicator of emotional blockage. If you can't remember. I mean, everything in you is structured so that you should be able to remember the impressions from the time you were 2 or 3 days old.
When was the Korean War?
52.
Yes, you weren't born.
My dad was right
at... My point is that the things that keep you from remembering are these emotional walls or fears of, you know, trauma that causes some trigger mechanism to keep you from remembering. Now, I can't prove this on a scientific basis.
So you have the emotion without the understanding of what it came from.
Right.
Well, let me ask you this question. Is it necessarily important that... let me approach it from this angle. You know, I saw one of my major growths the other night when we were first talking about it, not the pillar night, but the night before that, that I think explains a lot of stuff about me. But I don't really have an event, although probably there was one, but I don't especially have an event that I know that it's tied to. I have an event that happened when I was 10 or 11 that kind of typifies the whole thing, but I'm sure that growth was probably in an advanced stage of development by that time.
Do you know in the Hebrew, in this Talmud, there's one volume of the Talmud that's almost exclusively about pillars and groves. But obviously they take it as external, and our battlefield is no longer external, it's internal, as we've talked so many times. But the way you know, the way an idol or a grove or a pillar is destroyed is when you no longer receive any benefit from it. Now, what the hell does that mean? Well, it means that you no longer, if you can see it openly and clearly, and it means nothing to you,
right,
then there's freedom from it. But again, sometimes when I look at you in the middle of preaching or something, I see a bunch of little babies sucking on their thumb responding the same way the little babies did. Not little babies in the spirit, but little babies in the flesh. Because you still respond to stimulus in the same way you did as that young child. But now, the only difference now, you have the capacity to excuse it and to rationalize it. You understand?
Well, we have a good reason.
Well, you look blown away by something. What's going on with you?
Well, I feel that the longer we talk, the younger I'm getting. I'm literally
the incredible shaking, shrinking man.
I feel like I'm getting smaller and younger.
You're getting
and
small.
I'm scared of dressing
you. I feel like I'm getting younger and smaller.
It'll just be a blob of plasma.
Fear of exposure is what causes the nervousness and the trembling. It happened. I mean, his name is Jealous. Nothing else besides God is to be in your life, because every one of these things are an enemy of grace. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now let's.
When God replaces the pillar and the grove phenomenon, what is it? What happens? What's the transaction? It's just they lose their control and power, and somehow He's there. Or is that what's happening?
I'm crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I that live, but Christ that liveth in me. The life I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God. You know that. There's no more second guessing. There's no more.
We're not under the power of those early life phenomena.
Well,
it's like the Shekinah glory is there instead of the idols.
Right.
If that's the picture you're looking for, that's the alternative picture from idol worship is that.
We don't actually, you know, it's only kind of in here when there's preaching and it's opened up that we're even aware of this stuff going on. So of the word is preached and God rushes in, you know.
I think this is a preaching kind of night, isn't it, Nolan? This is that's what you're trying to get on with. I kind of get that feeling that you're ready to roll on without a lot of comments and interruption.
It doesn't matter. I never get to do what I want to do anyway.
Well, what, you know, is it grace that he reveals the stuff? I mean, how do you get down to it? Can you know, psychotherapy and all that kind of stuff get down to it?
Well, all its psychotherapy and group psychology and psychology and psychiatry and all of those things are just a picture of what God would intend in this Groves concept.
Only we call it psychotorture.
We're not going to do that anymore.
She wasn't here.
She was here. She's absolved.
Psycho fun.
Ignorance is no easy.
We're not calling it psychotorture.
Ignorance is no excuse.
We're not doing psychotorture anymore.
One of the things that, you know, there's been all kinds of research and documentation recently about child abuse.
That was good.
You're wet.
I thought your back was out.
I think I'm going to abuse a child here in a minute. The interesting thing about child abuse is like if a little girl was abused by her father, she will marry or be attracted to a similar type of person. If a little boy was abused by his mother or dominated, he will be attracted to the same type of person. And so the idea that, I mean, the sins of the fathers are passed on to the third and fourth generation unless there is a freedom from it. Mm. Now, once you see that you're the top of the pyramid and all that existed simply to bring you to the knowledge of God that you might see, then these arenas lose their hold on you. And again, I believe that all modern psychiatry and psychology and all of the various psychosciences have as their goal this phenomena. They don't obviously see it that way. But God wants you free. If you're not free subconsciously as well as consciously, then there's no freedom. Because all that will happen to you is a particular fear or a response will take place in which you'll respond out of this negative emotion. You will respond out of flesh instead of, you will walk by sight rather than walking by faith. Now, what are these things? What are these things that cause you? I'm going to just review a bunch of them that I got from all kinds of different sources.
These are general things.
General things that may trigger in you a remembrance that you need to sit down and, if it triggers in you something, then it has a meaning. But you don't have to worry about analyzing yourself. It should be your honest or emotional response to a stimulus. I mean, to the preaching or to the words. Don't sit around and analyze yourself. But as a young child, if you were involved with the death or divorce or the absence of one or more parents, that's going to cause a phenomena which will manifest itself normally in later life. You'll respond without reason. You'll respond emotionally based on trying to restructure that idealized position. And when you have, if you were as a child, you were involved, you had the complete or partial lack of support or approval. You never had any verbal encouragement from parents or family. And all that has left you with little or no sense of self-worth. Now, this is a comparative thing. I mean, if you were teased unmercifully by your father, constant judgment, you end up with a sense of self-worth that's lacking. By the same token, if you had overprotective parents that never let you make a mistake, never let you fail, did your homework for you, then that will leave a scarring which will also manifest itself in a childish thing in terms of how you respond today. Do you see? Then one of the interesting things this happens even later is if you have parents that never let you run out of money, or a family that never lets you run out of money, you're not gonna have the right to fail, and therefore your psyche is scarred. Obviously, the biggie in this arena is the religious parents, judgmental religion, using that which God intended to reveal the sin as an instrument to cause you to become righteous. You understand what I'm saying?
No, or know that you're not.
Well, no, they used, don't you follow the Ten Commandments? You're supposed to do this, this, and this. Rather than saying, you know, you can't do any of that stuff.
Or you're accepted if you can't do
it. Yeah, you're accepted under any condition. And another biggie is the confusion to the small child. And this is especially true now to you as parents, who preach one thing and live another. And that's seen through as a child in an instant. But it'll cause you to value hypocrisy. It'll hypocrisy will be that which gives you life in every arena. Whether it's emotional or sexual, or you'll always have to act. Okay? Continuing on, parents, is that you never meet up to their standards. Now, this is perceived standards. They may act like they're loving and kind to you, but you intuit that you've never met their standards. And so you will always be in a struggle to gain approval all your life. Huh? Yeah. There's a lot of you.
I don't think I've missed one yet.
Yeah, I'm waiting to hear one. I'm
waiting here. I haven't done yet.
So far I've got at least one that I didn't cook anything.
This is there's a biggie now. I want you to put yourself back as a child and remember children that you looked up to, whether they were, maybe it's because they were 1 or 2 years older than you were or some such thing, but they nagged you and picked on you and teased you unmercifully. And it was all under the guise of humor. Now, obviously, how is that going to manifest itself? Well, many ways. But one of the ways, it's you're going to do the same thing. No, you're going to do it too, because that's the way you gain life. You've seen that as successful, so you will do it to gain life. And it's compulsive. There's certain of you that if you didn't do that, you'd have nothing to say. Or, as John just got to say, he said, if I get rid of all my groves and all my pillars, there'd be about that much left of me.
Bush,
ask
me that.
That's
my
point.
Thank you.
Sure.
I know. Just use it for table.
Another thing that happens is that, and this doesn't necessarily have to do with moving from city to city, but even moving within the city or within a relatively small area, to a child, if you are transient,
may as well move to the Philippines.
Then it doesn't matter whether it's across the street or to Guam. There will be a sense of no you will find that I think the manifestation of it would be that you will tend to be that way. In other words, if that was successful in doing that, then you will do that with people with in all arenas of your life. You will.
You don't want to make any big ties.
Right. You won't
relationships
tie
relationships that are long lasting because in your mind you're.
Right.
You got to move on, you know. And
why is that thing successful? But why are these things?
Because you deem it. You deem it as successful.
A child, I mean, they don't want to make a tie to a real good friend if they believe that they're not gonna have this friend for a long time, and so. You make a nice casual relationship,
and
you have the
because you don't get
it right. You say,
that's
I'm going to, you know, and this is a good thing
like,
because
you know,
I make nice casual good, relationships, and then I can go to the next person and
right.
have a nice casual
right.
relationship.
Right.
That's good.
Everybody's your friend.
Yeah, I think that would be a good example. You would have a whole you would claim you in your life you would have a whole lot of quote unquote friends, but none of them are.
They're on the surface level.
A biggie. Now we see we're talking about little kids, and then we move up. All these things happen during the range, all the way up. I mean, can you imagine? I was very lucky because I never had acne. But I know the trauma that it caused people that I grew up with. I mean, it was mind-blowing. Now, not just acne, but it's other anything that anything that would cause you to feel inferior. It could be your size, your height, your weight, your lack of weight, whatever. It's whatever that's perceived as the child to cause you to feel inferior. And your response to that will be feeling inferior is successful.
Because you're not in competition?
That's one of the arenas, yeah, but there are many others. So, there are all kinds of tentacles in each one of these.
What does successful actually mean? It means that
you're able to live.
Your identity is intact.
Survival.
Survive. You survive. You define survival as success.
So it doesn't matter
right.
what it was, if you
right.
survive,
right.
so suddenly it was success, whether it was terrible or not.
Well, anyway, another sort of the same, just a little bit different, is in that movement there's a continual, and not just because of that, but there are other reasons, there's a continual low self-esteem, and where this comes in, this is where you end up using the doctrine to excuse it. You confuse low self-esteem with humility, and so your identity, believe it or not, your identity is its fundamental tenet is think badly of yourself. And you can't get out of it. It's a trap. It's the opposite of taking no thought for self. You know, as we've said before, the great revelation of this is shyness. Shyness has but one origin, and that's pride. But the pride is the reverse. It's the idea that if you define pride as any thought of the thought of self in the picture, then your identity came from having the low self-esteem. And so the shyness, the only reason anybody is shy is a fear of rejection. The only reason there's fear of rejection is because there's a low self-esteem. And so sometimes you overcome that shyness by being totally obnoxious, and everybody can see through it. Even you in your more lucid moments see through it. But most of the time that shyness is your whole identity. Its fundamental basis is pride. But that's why, you understand, these are the things that mold you, I mean, mold all the people in the human race. And so that's why it's so stupid. The only reason that somebody like a Ross Perot is successful is because he was overcoming, or his groves happened to be in that direction. It has nothing to do with anything of value.
One thing you said last year when we were talking about this was how these, like there's some original moment of separation when you're a child, and then each of these different things you grow up reinforces the same,
right.
The same response, you know, and it, mm-hmm. it makes it deeper and gave, you know, takes up more.
Well, it takes, you can't emotion. See the tree anymore, because every one of those successes is a hanging on the dead tree. You've hung an ornament. I mean, every time that it's reinforced, you've added an ornament to it. And any success in the world, you know, I mean, just think how stupid God looks at that. I mean, that's why this success in life BS is just, it's just sickening. Because it's all based on either groves or pillars. It's false idols. And so how can, you know, so what if somebody's successful based on his use of false idolatry? Or idolatry at all?
That really makes sense. I mean, it just...
Okay, the other biggie is that, and this is that contributes to the low self-esteem, is that you went through the early years with absolutely no trust from your mother or father. They never believed you. Well, you see that when that happens, then your identity will have to be based on a false premise. Your identity will have to be based on the arena of rationalizing or justifying or excusing yourself, and you'll do it automatically. You won't even know you're doing it because that was your identity. Now, a whole lot of you are in this position, believe me. A whole lot of us are. Biggie, another one is parents who force you to take sides, or any family members who force you to take sides. I mean, that's a massive trauma. But each one of these are just something that adds more and more layers to the idol. Nicknames. Of course, none of you are bothered by nicknames. Red in the head like pecker and a dog.
Is that your nickname?
Somebody had to get pretty creative for that.
Yeah. Another one is is being ashamed of your family. That's what I'm guilty of. I was ashamed of my family. Now, the other side of the coin is being intimidated by your family. Either one. You know, this is why there's such a... The father of the successful
person. Trying to live up to the image or something?
Yeah. Is almost never successful. Well, now the obvious ones that we haven't talked about are the physical abuse or mental abuse or sexual abuse. Do you realize what percentage of women are sexually abused before they're 18?
30 or something like that.
One out of three.
It's a third.
Wow. Do you know what else?
What does that mean? That they're abused by their parent?
Or not necessarily. Anyway. They're normally abused by a family friend or relative. Or, but you know what else? Most of them won't remember it. The biggest abuse is mental abuse. And the obvious is physical abuse. But all these... At that young age, at the seminal point of each one of these conditions, a false identity was constructed. It was branches and then leaves on the branches of the false tree of life. And so you spend a lifetime constructing this pretty tree. And all of them cause you to respond. When you're confronted with that stimulus, you respond not out of freedom, not out of knowledge, not out of faith, but you respond vis-a-vis the senses. Well, there's a couple others that are, you know, it's really traumatic when you're a little kid to have bad grades. And your identity becomes you're dumb or you're stupid. That's a bit, I mean, do you remember? But we usually make up all kinds of stories so we don't have to think about it. And another biggie is no physical skills. If you have no mental skills, then sometimes, without the mental skills, then you make up for it by physical skills. But if you have no physical skills, you make up with no mental. But if you have neither one, then
huh? You have to get rid of
it. Oh gosh. There's 1,000 more that you could think about and think up and make up. Remember. Now, why, in your heart of hearts, you know, every one of you likes something sexually. I mean, we found out all kinds of things. Other than that which is normal. Other than that which is lost. Why do you like women?
Because they're shaped like mud.
No, he said, I like women. I mean, you know, why do you do that? Because I believe that the only reason that we have a sexual identity has nothing to do with a continuation of the race. It has to do with so that we can see the mystery.
That's what I was
thinking. Now, why... Isn't that seen? Why is the identity so perverted? You know, why is it in from God's standpoint, why is it so illicit, illegal?
What?
Your sexuality.
Because we're doing it as part of our groves stuff rather than responding to the mystery that we see.
Amen.
We see the grove stuff, and so that makes it illicit because we're doing it there in front of the pillar and the grove and as part of that.
Right, we're doing it as part of the illegal ceremony,
right,
instead of as unto the Lord. I don't want to freak you out, but what most of the stuff that turns you on in your heart, secret heart of hearts, that there is a, you know, everyone has a what's that fetish? Is it's pornography. If I like it, it's erotic. If you like it, it's pornography. You know, if I like it, it's normal. If you like it, it's a fetish. Now, the fetishes, that the thing, there's stimuli that will knock you on your butt. Every one of you. You'll see something, or you'll hear something that has nothing to do with love. Right?
Right.
It knocks you on your butt. You become totally out of control for an instant.
I haven't experienced that in such a long time. I forgot what it was, though.
It's there.
Lurking.
It's lurking. Lurking.
Potentially, anything that doesn't have anything to do with love.
Not
is
slam key.
It's a grove.
Here, he took that as an offense.
No, the offense was that it was illegal. So if it's with you, it's legal, allegedly. No, but why is that about us? Why is there a, you know, why do some respond to dirty words? Why do some respond to I don't know. I won't go down the gamut of stuff. But
so I'm sorry. Okay. Are you talking about things that I will say are quote illicit?
Well, it doesn't matter whether you say they are illicit or not. If they're illicit because their response is from God's standpoint, they are without love.
Well, no. I'm trying to understand it from my point of view, and what you said.
You may not see it as illicit.
No, but. But I was trying to understand this thing, and you know, it's the old maxim that stolen fruit is the sweetest and stuff like that.
Well, why is that true?
Well, that's what I was trying to catch on to when I asked illicit, because there is this thing there that makes the things that you have some feeling or something in your mind says this is illicit, somehow those things are more attractive or can be more attractive.
Why?
I don't know. That's what I was trying to catch on to. That's why I asked the question.
Why in it?
Because it's hidden.
Why would anybody in their right mind go to a titty bar when there's absolutely no chance of making it with one of them? And you give them, you
there
have to borrow.
Who gives you $50?
You have to borrow $100 from your friend to give it to her so you don't get any. Because she
Wait a minute,
needed
you just
it.
Insulted me.
But why would a woman want to go see a bunch of, you know, what's that?
The
LaBear.
Or watch a movie like Caligula.
Why do we respond to those things?
Is there any validity to liking certain body types?
Certain body parts?
Like
no,
this
type. Types. Not parts.
You were going to say parts.
What did you say? Body types?
Types. Remember, body parts.
Well, the validity comes in your own experience. Your experience has validated it. You have a reason. Every one of us has a reason for liking whatever
certain
we like.
Certain kinds of people?
Yeah. But I want to get down to the core. Why is it, first of all, if we can accept for a minute that the only function of our sexuality is that we would more clearly see and understand the mystery, then why is it become so perverted from that point? I mean, if I, you know, what's the hard-on has no conscience.
I mean, it's just I no more think about the mystery than a man in the moon. I think about getting laid. Why?
I'll take another shot at it. It's because it's illegal, we stay hidden. Okay, we stay hidden in one way or another, in the same way that with the groves, people went and made love on this hill under this tree, you know, reasonable distance away from things. And I theorize that it has to do with the ability to have this thing happen without having to be open. In other words, you can stay hidden, you can play out the fantasy in your mind, you're playing Dungeons and Dragons or something like that in your mind while you're doing this thing, whatever it is. And it doesn't matter if that's in a titty bar watching, because it's happening inside your head and it's hidden.
Let me come at you from, let me see if I can answer it. The reason is because we make love with the body and the soul, and God would have us make love with the spirit, soul, and body. In other words, we have to penetrate that hymen, that wall, that mystery. Now, most of us have never done that. Most of you have never even made love to somebody's mind. You think making love to their body is hot stuff. But the reason is because we either because of all of these groves and things that I've just enumerated, there's a reason that you won't even get to the soul or the mind, and that is because of the fear of exposure or being ashamed. And so, therefore, your shame is the motivator to be satisfied with something less than God has intended. Do you understand me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No.
No. Shame in regards to why we don't.
You enjoy the shame.
Well, I don't understand. What shame?
The shame of keeping. The shame of. Oh, my Lord, my Lord, my Lord. God had designed us so that there would be, that in the sexual act, you would be sanctified totally, body, soul, and spirit. Now, for most of the world, the only thing the world knows about sex is the body. The reason is that they're afraid of the exposure, they're ashamed of the exposure of the intercourse of the mind or the soul. You're ashamed to open that arena, and so you're satisfied with just the body. Okay? Now, I'm not talking about only the singles, I'm talking especially to the married people. There's such a total shame of the potential in you to expose what's there that you're satisfied with something less than you really want. And so even in the process of making love to your wife or to your husband, your mind is a place in which you are ashamed. You're thinking a fantasy. You're thinking about another man or another woman or something you've seen that day. So but my point to you is this, is that you enjoy that shame. The reason you do is you don't think that openness of even at that level of soul, you think it would cause you separation. So therefore it's a fear of death. Please understand. Okay? Now the biggie. Why not have intercourse at body, soul, and spirit?
Yeah, even if you get into the idea of sharing in your mind.
Mind.
You
now let's go to the
bring
spirit.
Bring God into it is a whole.
Now, thing. The reason is, why? Because, that's right, but the reason is because of shame. Because you've eaten of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And you can't possibly risk bringing God into that arena. Now, what I'm saying to you is this, that the final one, don't worry about it, because you're not there yet. You got to get through, the groves have to be destroyed in the soul before there's intercourse in the spirit. be sanctified means to be set apart. You must begin to risk, to be sanctified means you're set apart from everything. So, but to be sanctified together is the meaning of the mystery. I think I'm talking to the wall.
Talking to the hymen. That's the first thing I've heard.
What?
That's the first thing I really heard.
Okay, because it talks talking about sex?
No, the thing about to be sanctified together was the purpose of
those. Yeah. But I just want, I mean, some of you in your married life have made an inroad, so to speak. But you haven't done it. You haven't exposed yourself totally.
It's really not too different than believing in the salvation of the isolated self.
Yeah.
It's sex of the isolated self.
Yeah.
Survival of the isolated self.
But what I'm telling you is the thing that's keeping you locked in. Do you know what it must seem to God for you to lock in as a fantasy a past sexual activity? Do you know what that does?
It's like thinking about poop in order to get hungry to eat your next meal. That's what excites your appetite.
Good job. Yeah.
That's hey, it's in there somewhere.
Just settling for a while.
Sorry about that, Larry.
Yeah.
Did you get rid of
Larry? He's not eating
anymore.
But please begin to risk. And when there is a tendency not to risk, now I'm not just talking in sex. That sex is easy to risk in, relatively speaking. But its only function is so that we as a body could see the need to risk totally. We can't experience joy one with another until we have all things in common, until we have emptied ourselves of all these arenas. I hope people have understood. Okay. But the things that keep us from that is a shame, because we believe in the salvation of the isolated self. We believe in that. So, but how many of you actually express to your partner what you're feeling at every moment when you're making love? How many of you would like your partner to do something different but are afraid to say it, and so therefore you imagine it? Well, that's all of those things are just the revelation of our hiding in every arena. Now, God wants us free.
We said something the other night about how, you know, Adam and Eve, after they ate of the fruit, hid themselves in the trees in the forest, and how that pertains to groves and
stuff.
Now, how does that work with a kid, a year old, 2 years old?
Well, he's just in the process of planting the trees then.
But is that child hiding from God?
No, he's not hiding. Spiritually, he can't hide until he becomes aware of self. And that self-awareness is that what, you know, is a point that comes at a different ages, but it's probably 2 or 3 years. I don't know when it is.
So yeah, it's pretty young.
I'll tell you, that thing I was reading about, that book about magic, was deeply involved in psychology and sociology too, and it talked about the child at about 8 months, when the first time it realizes its mother is actually
separate.
Gone to bed and it's in this other room or something, or something like that, and it's love, and they talk about it in terms of libido or sexual feeling as well. It says kathets, or just cuts off the mother, because, you know, in order to survive. In other words, it's the only way for it, if it continues in this feeling of separation, it feels like it will die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what it does, it cuts off the mother, and the only other person around is itself. And so it begins to love itself.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. And then, and that's where it starts. I mean, as far as coming out in the open. The ego, the child, doesn't become self-conscious in the way we're self-conscious, but it does something, loves itself in that sense. Later on, it goes through another stage of loving its mother again, and then, you know, doing all this father stuff, and then on and on and on, over and over again, reinforcing this, what they've gotten down. There's probably some incidences before that even, but they can only figure out that this is what happens to most people about 8 months old.
So is that, am I
which
hearing,
is while hiding in the trees.
Yeah,
you know?
So am I hearing then that the child around the 8 month period really only sees black and white, only sees absolutes. It's either all or nothing. It and mother are one, or it is the isolated self.
It realizes it and its mother aren't one anymore.
So it opts for the isolated.
And
it hasn't
been aware of itself as separate from its mother. It's been aware kind of a mother, but it hasn't been aware of itself because it's part of the mother. It's always there. You know, it wakes up, the mother's there. It begins to do things like cry, drop its bottle to make the mother mm-hmm. come. And that's why you begin to get cause and effect as
so
a result
is,
of that
so
fear
this,
of separation.
So this then is the beginning of the belief in the isolated self. And it's the beginning of the belief in cause and effect. It's the beginning of awareness or perception of linear time. It's all those things.
Probably so.
Because, I mean, I learned that if I screamed, the big person would come and give me some. And I began to be aware of how long the big person was gone. And
but it's important that we recognize that we couldn't have survived unless we had constructed those high places.
Well, just one more thing. It sounds to me then like it's definitely in, quote, God's order, end quote, for there to be a stage of belief in the isolated self.
No, sure. There has to be. There couldn't be
an
end. But there's also, in God's order, no matter what condition you're in, and have been in, is perfect. You don't have to ever again judge yourself. And that's the secret of this. Because those high places have been necessary to bring you here, to bring you to the point of you are, of where you are.
Right.
So don't use this as an instrument to condemn yourself. That's just another lie.
So then, more than likely, there was a movement in Jesus from belief in the isolated self to abandonment.
Of course. There was also high places and groves. He had to go through the exact path we did.
He led obedience to the things he suffered.
Right. None of this could make any sense, and it would just be isolated psychotherapy or some other psychotorture, if it wasn't for the fact that in the pillars and in the groves you can have confidence in them being destroyed. Because he is the way.
Mm-hmm.
And his way is manifested automatically as you abandon, truly abandon yourself.
To me, this really brings to life the thing about when I was a child, I spake as a child.
Right.
And it was appropriate to do so.
Right. That's why I said, I write unto you, little children.
Right.
Because your sin is forgiven. I write unto you, adolescents, because you know the Father. I write unto you, young men, because you overcome the evil one. And I write unto you, fathers, because you've known him that is from the beginning.
I'm also reassured by the fact that the movement from infant to child to young man, etc., is a process that takes place. It isn't something you can
make. But
it's
not dependent on time, it's dependent on obedience or life.
Can you be free from this stuff by confession and seeing, or does it take other action sometime to break the
reinforcement? Well, the scriptures say no. The scripture says you can be free by confession.
Right. Confession and torture.
But it's probably admitting doesn't get the job done.
Admitting doesn't get the job done.
If you're afraid of heights, you don't have to go stand on a steel beam.
You have to jump.
Start with the ball.
Keep praying for Ed. Any other prayer requests? Take it, big guy.
Big person.
Or big person.
Big person.
That's the case.
Big person.